Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
This is Titans head coach Mike Vrabel, and you're listening to the official station for Titans football.
Touchdown, Titans!
104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Thank God Paul didn't cuss right there.
Got it close every time. I've got a good streak going. Not as good as both of your streaks, which are the length of the show.
We're still pitching the perfect game.
Yeah, but mine pretty strong for me. Let's talk to the big boss.
Dave McGinnis joins us, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Coach Mac, back at the studio. What's up?
Guys, it's good. Paul, don't cuss at the spa. I mean, that's
well, I'm in a barbecue joint. It's okay, easier
Mac,
over here.
Mac, they pushed us down the street to Moe's Barbecue because Paul was cussing in the spa.
Well, I'm sure that's not true, but don't cuss at the barbecue place.
I know, they gave us a pedicure once, and I was like, man, that feels bleeping good.
Coach, we don't know what smells better, and you're a West Texas guy, so you'll probably give us this answer, but either the lavender oil in the spa or the barbecue here at Moe's.
Please.
It's difficult to know which smell is better.
Please. The barbecue. Come on, man.
Hey, before we get going on the Super Bowl,
okay,
what'd you think of the truth according to Kirby yesterday?
Just like I think every day. I mean, it's the most outstanding production on radio in America. You cannot get any better stories. And plus, just the delivery. First of all, you know, the delivery. And then, of course, you know, Paul's explanation of why he thinks, of course, Paul knows that it's all ignorant, but one of them is true. And so then his explanation. But Kirby, the situations he puts himself into, I mean, you know, he's talking about, you know, having a corned beef sandwich with Fred Thompson. I mean, come on, man. I mean, this guy is everything. I mean, when Steve Watterson was the strength coach, you know, at the Titans, you know, they used to have a tradition up there that on your birthday, at some point in the day, you were going to get a shaving cream pie in the face, you know, no matter who you were throughout the whole organization. And Watterson was the genesis of all of this. And so, you know, you never knew when it was coming. And, you know, Fred Thompson visited the team and Coach Fisher called the team up and for a few words, but it happened to be his birthday. And so Watterson came up behind him and, shaving cream pie in the face. I mean, it just, you know, so Kirby's sitting there eating a corned beef sandwich. Kirby's a celebrity. I mean, he's an international celebrity. He's clearly a celebrity here in Nash Vegas, and I absolutely love him. I wish somebody would just write these stories down. And look, I heard he does paintings, and I want a painting by Kirby. I want a self-portrait of Kirby with headphones on and smoking. That's what I want.
You do self-portraits, Kirby? Just not.
No, he said no.
No.
I mean, it's almost a sequel to Forrest Gump is what we're writing here with Kirby.
Except dumber.
Like sort of a not exceptional man that's put in these exceptional situations.
I would
typically excels in them.
I would disagree with that. He's an exceptional man. He's an exceptional man in exceptional situations. And he's willing to share it with America.
Hey, for the record, Fred Thompson was not happy with the pie in the face, right?
I don't think so.
You didn't care, though, is what I'm taking from that.
He's about to announce for the presidency, and he's got shaving cream in his ear.
I don't think so, but that, look, you know, a lot of things happen anytime you come into an NFL culture, and you just got to be ready to accept it.
Coach Mack with us, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plan.
By the way, Hutton saw that when he got plowed on the sideline by Delaney Walker.
I did. Just have to accept it.
Yeah, just get up and roll with it.
You know what, though? As Coach Matthews would say, John Hutton, he didn't miss a snap. He bounced right back up.
I did not.
He didn't.
I got that halftime report in for sure.
That's right.
He did. He's a trooper.
Mac, was this just a whitewash when it came to the coaching of Super Bowl 53, Belichick versus McVay?
Yes. Yes, and, you know, I was up, you know, when Arthur Smith and Dean Pease had their press conference earlier in the week, and was talking to Dean, you know, before he did his press conference, and he was, you know, he had two experienced defensive coaches in this league talking and just and grinning from ear to ear. You know, that ball game, when you watch it, I've dug into it three times already. I just love the game planning and the intricacies of it and what Bill Belichick and Brian Flores did with that defense against that offense. I mean, it was really, really fun to watch. And when you dissect it and run it back and forth and look at it, everything that they did and you know, the complete different packages that they ran on first, second, and third down, and the problems that they gave that offense, you know, starting with a six-man front on first down, setting really hard edges, you know, with a safety, and then with Van Noy, and then when Chung got hurt, you know, they reconfigured and put Hightower on the outside, but they and then of course, you know, they had Danny Shelton active, you know, you got big guys in the middle that were not allowing cutbacks, especially on first and second down, in run downs and in, you know, conflict down situations. They set those edges so hard that offense generates off of that outside zone, and with those condensed formations, they were not letting any edge. They were coming up the field, they were setting edges extremely hard, and then they were taking all of the play action bootleg game away. And not only just by the fact that they were able to come up the field with it, I mean, anytime anybody was coming across or behind, you know, that line of scrimmage to come out and be that second level receiver on the bootlegs, I mean, those outside edge guys were rocking them. I mean, there was nobody to throw to. That one time that Jared Goff, you know, held that ball so long and Van Noy was able to come screaming up there and hit him, and Jared Goff, you know, genuflected before he got hit. I mean, there was nobody to throw to. They did such a tremendous job of game planning that thing and game planning it by down and distance and personnel group. And then, you know, the chance that they took and they used, and you've got to have smart players to be able to do this, is, you know, they went quarters coverage, and not to get real technical for all our listeners, but look, when you've been playing, when you're a middle of the field post defense most of the time, and a 4-under-3 deep zone defense most of the season, and you're a man-to-man defense, and then you morph into a quarters defense, that takes a lot, because those safeties and those backers have to read things differently, and you also have to be able to pass off pattern combinations differently. And they did it brilliantly. They only blew it one time, and the one time they blew it, you know, Jared Goff had been hit so many times, guys. They hit this guy a lot. I think they hit him 11 or 12 times that I counted just watching the tape, and I mean big, hard body blows. And when he turned his back for that play action, he was late throwing it. He was looking at the rush. You know, that should have been a touchdown. Jason McCarty did a great job of coming over and taking up for a safety that blew it, that jumped a shallow Yankee crosser, which is, you know, is a cheese route to get somebody to bite. Well, he bit on it, but J-Mac did a great job of coming over, and the throw was late. But the defensive game plan and the way that Belichick and Brian Flores, they completely befuddled Sean McVay and his offense.
Just an example of giving Bill Belichick 2 weeks to prepare, or are the Patriots just more well-equipped to pull off a game plan like that against LA's offense?
No, I think both. I think both. I mean, anytime you give, you know, Bill Belichick that long to dial in on you, and plus, I mean, you know, everybody talks about it, but you could witness it, you could see it. I mean, very, very clearly, you know, you're talking about, you know, playing, you know, a defense that can morph into anything it needs to be able to take care of the opponent that day. They do it. They get players that can do it, and it lends a lot of credence, guys, to stability too. I mean, you've got you know, Bill Belichick that's been there for so long and always keeps a group of guys around him that understand. Mike Vrabel was one of those guys for years, an extremely smart physical player that can be able to adapt to any type of game plan week to week to week, and not only adapt and line up in the positions, but execute it and suffocate offenses or take away what they do best. And the way they did that was outstanding to watch. I mean, I really liked it. And let me just say this, Wade Phillips did a tremendous job too. You know, Wade Phillips and his defensive staff, I mean, that was a masterful defensive game with two very, you can't manufacture experience in this business. And on the biggest stage, you could see who the most experienced people were. It was those two defensive coordinators. And it was a really good heavyweight fight when you get down and just dissect, you know, the intricacies of what both of those defensive coordinators did throughout the course of a ball game.
I think most of us expect that McVay will really use this to kind of propel himself forward. I think a lot of us that don't know Jared Goff wonder if it'll propel him forward, or could be a an unraveling of sorts. Your expectation going forward there?
Yeah, that's a fair point, Paul. And again, you know, I expect both of them to learn from it. As I said, you know, and that offense, and again, you know, look at something else that was going on in that ball game, you know, and I think Tony Romo said something about it as far as to where, you know, they were, you know, during the season, you know, Sean McVay had really, you know, had run to the line quick, had been able to be in, you know, for the 15 seconds, be into Jared Goff's ear about what was going on, what was happening. Well, you know, that they were taking their time there because they didn't want to give Belichick time also, I guess, to talk. But look, when you take away that aspect of it and then you start putting all of that on Jared Goff, and they were giving him some pre-snap looks and some post-snap looks. I mean, he was frozen. He was paralyzed, you know, in a lot of things. And he's got to grow from that, because you've got to take that experience, because I mean, you know, Jared Goff, and he made some decent throws in this game, but he was late and he was wrong and he was looking at the rush at so many things, because they completely bamboozled him as far as some of the things they were showing him pre-snap and what they ended up doing post-snap. And they took away the big part of that game, which was that run game. They only had two outside zone cutbacks that were, you know, for positive yardage in that whole ball game between both Gurley and Anderson.
How thrilled are you as a defensive coordinator if you look across the field and see Todd Gurley out there as little as he was in
that game? Yeah, hey, look, and again, that to me, and I still don't understand that, and I don't think a lot of people do. And, you know, and I've tried to, you know, to call, and I know a lot of people out there, and the thing I keep getting is that, well, he was healthy. Well, then if he was healthy, then something else was going on. But look, you've got the highest paid back in the league, and a guy that, I mean, seriously, I mean, they rode him all the way there, and the things, now, was he nicked up? Well, he was nicked up early. Then he did some really good things in that Dallas ball game. And if he's healthy at that moment, you've got 7 months to get, you know, to get well again. You know, that's your horse. You need to ride him and do a lot of things with him. And if they present problems to you, then you start trying to use him in other ways. I mean, he was invisible in that ball game. And that's a real, real, I mean, I couldn't believe it. Now, again, I promise you that the Patriots were happy about it, but I don't understand what went on. I really don't. Still don't.
Coach Mack with us until 11. He's presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. He joins us every Thursday at this time. We have Coach Mack's contact coming up in a bit. Mack, you talk to a lot of people out on the West Coast. What are they saying about Gurley? What's the reaction been?
Well, yeah, I do, Jonathan, and I did after the game because I wanted to know, you know, what was going on with Gurley, and everybody tells me he's healthy. And, you know, and everyone you talk to, you know, gives you the same. And it must be coming out of the building is that, you know, he was healthy. And then, of course, you've heard Sean McVay take it on his shoulders. I just did not use him enough. And so, and then they, you know, they drop it. And I can't get anything else out of it. So there's, but, you know, I've just been doing this for too long, and you guys have too. And I mean, there's got to be something else to it. But the fact is, what happened, they did not use him. And you know, they had a guy that they rode all the way to there, you know, and winning all the ball games they did that offense was built around. Now, they brought Anderson in there when he was hurt earlier, you know, which you could expect. But once you get your horse well, then you've got to ride him again, especially, you know, in the biggest race of the season. And he was just non-existent in that ball game. And it just, yeah, it's still a mystery to me. And again, I don't know. I mean, sooner or later, it'll come out, if there is anything to come out. But right now, the word is he was healthy, and then Sean McVay's taking it on himself, saying, I just didn't use him enough.
Yeah, I mean, you can't see me, but I'm shaking my head with that.
No, I know.
I'm because if he's healthy, if there are things behind the scenes that we don't know about that are not related to health, Even if that's going on, if you want to win a Super Bowl, you play the guy.
Well, everybody wants to win the Super Bowl. And plus, look, I mean, they just gave him $57 million.
Right.
You know, I mean, right. You know, it just, there's a lot of things that just don't add up. And, again, as I say, you know, they're sitting there scoring 3 points after, you know, being one of the most prolific offenses in the league this year. They scored 3 points in the biggest game of the year. There's a lot that didn't go right.
This stuff doesn't stay secret either. So that it has stayed secret is, I don't know, telling in a different way. And there are a bunch of very good reporters who are very tied in on that team who are not getting the answer.
Right.
That makes it all the more mysterious, obviously.
No, you're dead on, Paul, and that's 100% right, because as you say, you know something like this on that biggest stage, if there is indeed something else going on, you know, internally, you know, normally it'll come out of there, but right now it's exactly what I said and then exactly just what you said.
Mac, what was the plan for Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh by the Patriots offensive front, and what did the Rams do so well defensively up front to counter whatever New England was doing? Because, again, you mentioned Wade Phillips' defense played very well.
No, they did. I mean, those guys should have been sitting up front on the plane on the way back to L.A. and everybody else in the back, because I mean they did a great job. And I mean and that ball game, you know a lot of people say, well, it was boring because there were a lot of look, that game was not boring because any one play could have flipped that game. I mean that was really, if you enjoy defense and you enjoy the intricacies of what goes on and the matchups and the game planning and the chess game that goes on in a high profile NFL game, and you really get down a dig on it, I mean it was really, really compelling to watch. But look, I think it goes back, to the way that the Patriots practice. Dante Scarnecchia, we've already talked about. I mean, his prowess as an offensive line coach in this league is unmatched, and the things that he is able to do. Well, clearly they knew that those two disruptors in the middle, Sue and Aaron Donald, were people that had wrecked a lot of things. They took a practice squad player, a kid named Harris that they had from Miami, that's an undersized pass rusher, but he's very, very quick, and practicing with him all week, what they did, you know, when the scout team defense was giving Dante Scarnecchia's offensive line a look, every drill, I mean every team drill that he was in, they would line him up and in there and let him simulate, you know, Aaron Donald or Ndamukong Suh, because those guys are two of the quickest get off guys in the league, but they would line him up off sides. They lined him up off sides on purpose to give him a jump. So those offensive linemen would get used to being able to quick set, get their hands on it, combo up, which is another just a little game within the game preparation that was brilliant. But what they did, they ran the football right straight at him. And they lined up in 21 personnel, which is two backs, one tight end, two wideouts, eye formation, eye over formation. Very first play of the game, they get an eye over, which means that big 270-pound fullback is offset to the tight end side about 3.5 yards deep. They let Suh go completely free up the middle, you know, with a fan block, and then they wham blocked him from his blind side, you know, just to alert him that there's going to be some different things coming at you today if you're going to continue to jump the line of scrimmage. They did a tremendous job, of doing that. But they ran the football, and they stayed with it. And it's extremely important if you're going to commit to running the football, especially against a stout defensive front, you've got to continue to body punch it, body punch it, body punch it. And they did a lot of old-school football with two backs in the ball game running the football. Then their offensive guards did a nice job of pulling that big play they got coming off the goal line in the fourth quarter when they needed it, when they ran about a 16-yard run right out up the middle, that single back, you know, counter O that they ran. The guards did a nice job of pulling and fitting. It was a masterful job by the offensive line, you know, for New England, did a tremendous job. And on the opposite side of it, you know, the Rams offensive line, who had been pretty good all year, was completely confused by the different fronts and pressures they were getting, because what Belichick and Brian Flores were doing, you know, on pass downs, not conflict downs, they were going a true amoeba defense look with one guy with his hand on the ground and everybody else moving around. And it looked like at times Jared Goff thought there were 17 players on defense. He had no idea where they were coming from with their pressure, and a lot of it was just 4 or 5 man pressure. The only zero blitz they ran the whole game was the interception at the end.
Coach, here's what's strange about this game to me. You said chess match, and the chess match was fun to watch. I saw two defensive coaching staffs playing chess and offenses playing checkers until the Patriots decided to go 22 personnel and finally piece a drive together by doing something different. There was no counter by the offenses until that moment. That's what shocked me about this game. It looked like two genius defensive coaching staffs and two offenses that had no answer all night.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would give, you have to tip the hat to both defensive, you know, coaching staffs and players, because look, it's one thing to put a game plan in. It's another thing to execute a game plan. And I agree with you, but the 22 personnel that you mentioned is exactly what happens, which is basically a run formation personnel group. And he got Wade to go with his base people, and then they spread them out. It was 22 personnel, but it wasn't, you know, they didn't line up in two backs in the backfield. They spread everybody out with a 3-2 split, empty backfield set, ran the same pattern combinations three times in a row, and finally hit Gronk down the seam.
Mac, I know the answer to this, but I love when you tell the rules to going to a Super Bowl party with Coach Mac. There's a pregame and postgame rule, and then there's after kickoff, you can't do certain things.
Well, I don't. That's 100% true, and I'm not.
You're not allowed to interrupt Coach Mack as he watches the game.
Well, that's right. You know, I was at the Super Bowl party, you know, with two of them. And I said, look, please, you know, I came in early. Love to talk ball early but game starts, don't talk to me. And don't talk to me until halftime because I want to watch the game. And I
no
did.
No need to watch the halftime show.
No, I don't. Right? I don't need to watch the halftime show. I don't even know what it was because I was talking. But the people were very, 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 very respectful of that. And then we had good conversations before the game, halftime,
sure.
And after the game. So, yes, I wanted to watch it, and I did. And then I came back and watched it four more times on tape.
We always have great conversations with Coach Mack's contacts. David, let's find out this week's guest.
Hello.
Coach Max.
Hello.
Contacts.
Hello.
Who does Coach Mac know?
Hello.
Everybody. Mac, who are we talking to this week?
You know what? First of all, what a tremendous intro. Rhett Bryan, David Reed. Rhett Bryan and David Reed. Come on, guys. That's outstanding. This is, you know, we're talking Super Bowl. We're talking NFL. Nobody's ever been more dialed in to the National Football League in a lot of capacities. One of the all-time greats in this business, covering this business, Rick Goslin from the Dallas Morning News. You know, a Hall of Fame voter, just as Paul is. Connected with the Hall of Fame Football Network, one of the best ever. Goose, glad to have you on, man.
Goose will join us coming up. Looking forward to it. And he also got credit from Belichick for discovering Julian Edelman.
Ridiculous.
I can't wait to talk about this.
You talk about a guy dialed in, he's dialed in.
Who do I know in Dallas?
Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. Coach Dave McGinnis with us, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. And Coach Mac, this week's contact, Rick Goslin, who you know well.
No, Goose is the best. Look, if you've been involved in the National Football League any time at all, but especially, you know, at a very high level, Rick Goslin has covered this league for 30-plus years, and he is as dialed in this league as anybody. I was so fortunate 33 years ago when I first came into the league in Chicago and got to have a friendship with Goose, and it's been done nothing but been great over the years. And the things that he's done and what he means to this league and what he means to coaches in this league, you're going to find out in this interview. He's as dialed in as there gets, and there's no better person around. Goose, glad to have you on, brother.
Coach Mack, always a pleasure. You know that.
Well, you know what? I'm sitting here with three other really, really good guys, and this is by the way, Goose, this is a big time radio show, and I know you've got one too with the Hall of Fame Network, but this is big time here that we're doing this. So just know that you're not wasting your time.
If you weren't on it, it wouldn't be big time.
Oh, then there you go.
It's true.
And there we go, Goose. Hey, let's talk about just a minute. And I know that you know that Jonathan and Paul and you know and Chad have got some other questions for you. Let me just get your take, and I think I know the answer, but just a real quick take on the Super Bowl from your aspect, having seen all of them for a lot of years.
Well, I'm an offensive guy, so I loved it. You know, I heard things on Monday about that's the worst game, the most boring game. I argue that vehemently because midway through the fourth quarter, we're still wondering, are the Rams going to score to tie it? There was drama in that game midway through the fourth quarter. I've been at Super Bowls when the game was over at half. That was a boring Super Bowl. I was there in 88 when the Redskins put 35 points on the Broncos in the second quarter. That was a bad game. I was there in 85 when the Bears undressed the Patriots, and that game was over after one quarter. Those were bad Super Bowls. The one last Sunday, if you want offense, go watch the Big 12. If you want defense, go watch the NFL, because in the playoffs, defense shows up, and defense has a say in who wins championships.
Yeah, you know what? And that, as I said, Dean Pease had a press conference here earlier in the week, and I was talking to him before that, and you could just really appreciate what went on defensively at a high level, you know, in this ball game. Talking about the MVP though of this game, with all the great defense that was being played, the MVP of this game was Julian Edelman. And so you've got a there's a great story that Bill Belichick talked about, and we talk about how dialed in you've been for a lot of years in this league about Julian Edelman, and he put this out there, Goose, and for those of our listeners that don't know, you know, Rick Goslin has put out the best, you know, mock draft in the history of mock drafts when the Dallas Morning News was letting him do it, but he spent 6 and 7 months on it. When they told him that, you know, you can't spend this long on it, well, then he quit doing it, but it was masterful what he did. And what is that true or not, Goose? And so anyway, now just talk to us a little bit. Tell us the Edelman story, you and Belichick. Let's go.
Well, you know, back when I was doing the draft, I wasn't a scout. I didn't watch any tape. I was a writer. So what I did, I talked to people that did watch tape, that did know what a player looks like, and that did make decisions in draft rooms. And I was talking, you know, having been in the league 37 years, I was talking to all 32 teams. I was talking to multi people, scouts, assistant coaches, head coaches, GMs, personal directors. And on a nightly basis, I would talk to, you know, for a two-month period leading up to the draft, I've talked to anywhere from 6 to 10 NFL people, head coaches and GMs and scouts and things. And we'd banter about, you know, with names, you know, and I was talking to Belichick that one night, and we went through a couple positions, a couple players, and I said, did you hear about the Kent State quarterback? And he had, and I said, well, they had their pro day today. He ran like a 4.48. And he's an undersized option quarterback, but he'd be the fastest quarterback in this draft. And he says, you know, why don't I already know about this guy? And I'm sure by the time I hung up and by the time he left the complex that night, I'm sure he had Edelman wired. I'm sure he knew everything there was to know about Edelman, because that's how Belichick is. No stone unturned. And had I given that name to an offensive coach or a defensive coach, the name may have been discarded because he didn't fit in an offense. But Belichick places the greatest premium on special teams. And he looked at Edelman as a special teamer. One of the guys, he sent out two scouts to work about, and the second guy was Scott O'Brien. And he said, tell me if this guy has a chance to be a punt returner. He looked at Edelman as a guy who could return kicks, cover kicks, and be the 45th, 46th player on the roster. He didn't envision him being a Super Bowl MVP wide receiver, but give Belichick credit. He drafted him, he developed him, and he turned him into that Super Bowl MVP caliber receiver.
Rick Goslin is with the Talk of Fame Network.
Rick, outside of the draft work that you've done that's so fine, you're still doing your special teams work, which is highly regarded around the league. Tell us about how much goes into that and what prompts you to keep at it, because it's an underserved area that you've kind of taken claim of for a long, long time. Everybody looks at you as the main resource there.
Yeah, I was covering the Chiefs back in the 70s and 80s. In 1980, Frank Gans was a special teams coach of the Chiefs, and there were 28 teams at the time, and I don't think there were more than 10 special teams coaches. So Gans had this formula. He wanted to see how the Chiefs ranked against other teams in the league, so he had this formula for ranking special teams. And in 1980, he gave me the formula. There were 14 categories. And in 1980, I started doing these rankings. I've done it every year since then. And over time, I've added a number of categories. Now, I'm up to 22 now. I've had a block kicks, takeaways, penalties, kickoff starting point, opponent kickoff starting point. And then you rank them. If you're the best in all 22 categories, that's 1 point. So you've got a total of 22 points. If you're the worst, you get 32 points. So all the teams are stacked 1 through 32 in the 20 categories, add up the points, and you get where everybody ranks. And this year, 6 of the 8 division champions finished in the top 10. The top seed in each conference, New Orleans, Kansas City, Saints finished second, Chiefs finished third, Rams, NFC champion, finished ninth, Patriots, AFC champion, finished 10th. There's a correlation. Teams that put a premium on special teams generally benefit at the end of the season.
Hey, I thought in the Hall of Fame room, one of the things that you harp on in there and that I thought was very effective is how uneven it is, offense, defense. How important is it to you to kind of strike that chord over and over and remind us that if you're considering the last two guys on your ballot, maybe you ought to go defense?
Well, In the modern era, there's a 60-40 split that favors offensive players that have been tried. So anytime we put in more defensive players than offensive players, I like the class. And this was a historic class because first time we've ever put in two corners, first time we ever put in four defensive backs. And those four defensive backs combined had 216 interceptions. I mean, those guys are all worthy and deserving of the Hall of Fame. Johnny Robinson should have been in 30 years ago. And I think Ty Law should have been in 2 or 3 years ago. So it was, you know, we always talk about the backlog of the offensive linemen. Well, there's a backlog on defense, too. There are a lot of great players that have been overlooked over the years because we've been in such a rush to enshrine offensive players with stats. So I think hopefully we're now taking a harder look at those defensive guys. There's a lot of good defensive players that need to be enshrined in Canton, and hopefully we're going to start moving that queue along as well.
Rick Gosselin with us. Rick, we know Paul helped present Kevin Mawai in the room. From your perspective...
He got voted in despite Paul.
Why was this the year for Mawai?
He and Gary Morris, very effective presentation. I thought, if you're going to break a log jam, he's the guy. By putting in Mawai, you now have every first-team all-decade center enshrined. He was certainly deserving. Evan Smith once told me, that the key read in the running game is the center. And if you look at Kevin's productivity, all the 1,000-yard backs and all the high rankings that his teams have had in rushing, he certainly belonged. And also, he was a trendsetter. I mean, how many teams have been able in history to pull their center? And Kevin was a center you could pull in lead sweeps. He's a special player and special deserves a place in the Hall of Fame.
Coach Mack, we could go on and on with Rick Gosselin, couldn't we?
No, we absolutely could. And again, as I said, you know, Rick Gosselin is NFL royalty, and everybody recognizes it. And you know, he'll be humble and won't say it, but I will say it. I mean, he's as respected from front offices, from owners. I mean, he you know, whenever we'd go to the combine, we'd all go to dinner, but Goose would go to dinner with owners. Okay, and so I mean, that's where Rick Gosselin is on the pecking order of this league, and just one of the absolute best ever. Really appreciate you, Goose. You know it,
Goose,
brother.
Goose, give us one name on your way out. One NFL coach who does not like you.
They all want those specialty rankings. So I'm on everybody's good list for Christmas.
And there you go. Goose, thanks. Goose. You're the best, brother. See you, man.
Okay, guys. Have a good week.
Coach Mack, you're the best as well. You'll always bring it every Thursday with us. We appreciate you.
Guys, that was very good. Enjoy the barbecue and the lavender oil.
We will.
See you. See you.
Coach Mack, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. It's the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's.